Hello, and welcome to Minbar. I'm your host, Ahmed Hanif. The issue of women in Islam has been a flashpoint in the clash between Islam and secular modern culture. This is largely because the rights it claims it gives to women is a major standard by which modern Western society defines its freedoms. With few exceptions, it sees the rights of women as identical to that of men. The Islamic view, on the other hand, appears almost opposite that of the West, where Western thought, for example, strives to make men and women identical. Islam sees them as different. And this is especially striking with respect to issues concerning Islamic dress codes, marriage, the rights of inheritance, and providing testimony in a court of law. Is the criticism of Islam and its treatment of women a valid one? Or is it based on a misunderstanding of the Islamic position? Let's wade into this debate with Sakina Williamson, university student at the Islamic College of London. And in the second half, we will continue with Sayeda Habib, a life coach for Muslim women in the London area. Sakina, welcome to Minbar.
Thank you very much.
And the first question I'd like to ask you is, why do you think the West is so critical to Islam?
I think actually it's because many people misunderstand the principles that we Muslims practice. Because as we see in our society, it's not always that the Muslims are practicing Islam. Mm-hmm. But they pick their own little book and then practice what they think they should do. And many of them practice only the culture. They can't really distinguish what is culture and what is true religion.
Right.
So they, many girls, for example, are brought up with hijab. They are brought up with only the physical part. You have to wear the scarf, you have to wear this and that. And if they question, they're in trouble. Mm-hmm. And the same with fasting, the same with prayer, the same. And in that way, when people ask them, from in Britain, for example, when people ask them, then why do you do this? Well, then they actually don't really know, because that is just their culture, and they haven't really, like, they haven't really gone into the religion, the philosophy of why am I doing this.
Right, right.
So it's more the practice.
Yeah. So you think a lot of the negative views on Islam is based upon watching Muslims practicing like a sort of a partial Islam.
Exactly.
Muslim not understanding their own religion properly.
Yeah, more or less.
Uh-huh. Now, one of the areas that has been problematic, or one area there, for example, maybe that same principle holds, you know, the mispractice of Islam, really, is in the area of women, you know, in terms of Muslims not being proper Muslims with respect to their treatment of women.
Exactly, yes, but that's again back to culture.
Right.
But that in a typical Arabic family, the man has honor, he's the he's the big guy, and the woman is the oppressed one, as they're called. So that is the Western views from outside. When they see it, they would argue, well, she is oppressed.
Right.
So the male gets from this culture a sort of a role model to live up to, rather than actually practice the philosophy of the religion.
Right.
You understand?
So, but beyond that, there are some Islamic principles that seem to be a bit problematic for Western people, and sometimes even for Muslims themselves.
Yeah,
for example,
exactly.
The whole idea of, let's say, the testimony of one man equal to two women in a court of law.
That's right.
I mean,
yes.
This exists in Islam. How do we explain this?
Well, the Western society likes to see women, as you just said, as the same in creation, if you can say that, that they are exactly the same. They have the same way of thinking, the same way of feeling.
Identical to men, exactly. No difference.
Yeah. Exactly. But in real life, we know that that's not true. We can tell that, well, woman doesn't think like men does. Mm. So there are many aspects, for example, let's say, with feeling, sometimes women can be a bit more sensible and have a bit, maybe they want to...
More emotional, you mean? Is it sensible? More emotional?
Yeah, maybe more emotional, yeah. or
sensitive.
Do a little, like a little feather. Mm-hmm. We have this way of saying, this saying in Danish, that many people make one feather to five chickens, or mm-hmm. what do you say? So a little story to a big thing.
Right.
That one thing is the happening, as you mentioned with the court. One thing is what really happened. Another thing is what do we like to happen.
I see.
So we can make a bigger story out of
right.
it. Where if you see in the male society and in the male gatherings, there are not as much talking, not as much, did she do that? And
So now what would be the wisdom or the reasoning? How could we justify or explain the whole idea of the vote of one man, the testimony of one man being equal to the testimony of two women?
Well, when there is two women, there are two witnesses saying, well, no, now you are actually overreacting. Now, this was not what happened.
Right.
So they are there to actually keep themselves on track, if you know what I mean. Whereas a man, in his nature, would maybe do as much drama out of it.
So men tend to be less motivated by their emotions or their inclinations
exactly.
than women would be.
Yeah, in general, of course.
Right.
Here is Islam's act in general here, of course, not in the single.
Again, what about the whole idea of polygamy? You know, for example, people say that in Islam, polygamy is restricted to men and it's not restricted to women. Why can't a woman have four husbands just like a man have four wives?
Of course. Of course, that is not only, many would argue that it's only a matter of, well, then people wouldn't know who's the father of the child.
If a woman had more than one husband.
Exactly. Yeah. Then a kid wakes up and who of those four is my actual father?
Yeah.
And in Islam, that is very important. Mm-hmm. But opposite, you would always know who your mother is.
Right.
That wouldn't be a problem. But this is only the practical part. Because today we have DNA, we can actually go back to these things. But in the whole, how is men and women created? How are we in our emotions again? That we have a completely different way of looking at marriage, for example. Mm-hmm. That women wouldn't, in general, of course, again, wouldn't have to contain that much emotions for so many men.
Right.
But on the opposite, a man can, in general, handle this.
Mm-hmm. Is it because you think he might be less emotional and probably less subject to his emotional ups and downs?
It could be, but also the emotional care of the family. That the woman has the responsibility to take care of the family emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
Again, so the man doesn't have the same responsibility in Islam. He doesn't have to take care of the family other than financial. Of course you have to be there, of course you have to bring up the children, but it is the woman's responsibility to be there for them emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
So you could argue that she can't contain that emotionally.
Now here's a very tricky issue here now. In the Quran, it says that a man is allowed to beat his wife.
Okay. Yeah, that is
a man is allowed to beat his wife. Now, wouldn't this be something that encourages, for example, wife abuse and so forth?
Exactly. And trust me, that is what many males in the culture, in the Arab culture, does in general. Because
just
again,
in Arab culture?
Sorry?
Just in Arab culture?
No, not just in Arab culture, but the Muslims in general interpretate their own Quran, of course. Right. But again, we have to look at how is it said that, okay, if a woman misbehaves, then you can just beat her. Mm. It's not the way it's put up. And the word beat, if you look in Arabic, it has so many meanings. And one of them is walk away from her.
I see.
So, and
beat
that
it.
Is... Sorry?
It means beat it. You know, beat it, like, get lost.
Exactly.
Yes, okay.
But that is the third stage. Mm-hmm. So the first stage is actually to try to talk to her. If she does something against Islam, mm-hmm. not only against him and not obeying him, and but to talk to her, and and if she still neglects that this is her duty, he would have to say, well, then we can't share the same bed. Mm-hmm. And normally a woman would be not that stubborn to still continue. But hereafter, he can walk away, mm-hmm. Emotionally, of course.
I see.
Because then, if we come back, a woman has a very hard time being emotionally ignored, rather than physically.
I see. So the whole idea of beat here is interpreted as walking away.
Exactly.
From
yeah.
The whole
of course,
situation.
There's many opinions mm-hmm. on that, and many interpretations.
Right.
But
now, some interpretations say actually hit. You know, some of it means hit.
Exactly.
How do they explain this? What does hitting mean, for example?
Yeah, exactly. And what is hitting? Is that until she's yellow and blue and can't walk? No. This hitting is some argue, explained by the Prophet, that he used this miswak, the little stick. Exactly.
The toothstick.
That they used to use. Right. And have a Quran under the arm.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see you can't really move that much. So this whole idea is symbolic and not to beat, but this hitting.
Now,
on
what
the
would
hand.
The symbolism mean? What would the symbolism mean in this case?
That this misbehaving, mm-hmm. again, misbehaving according to Islam, that this is not accepted.
Mm-hmm.
Because she has to be a role model for the children, for the society. The woman in Islam has such a high status that she is a role model for the whole society. It could be that she's not openly the role model, but she is the successful one behind the man who stands up and do something for society. If not, she's doing it. So for the children, she has to be a role model. And if she is not acting upon according to Islam, then what?
I see.
Then what is turning into?
There's another instance where people look at the hijab, you know, and they see hijab as something imposed upon women.
Of course.
That brings restrictions upon them by virtue of the fact that they don't see men wearing hijab.
Exactly.
Is there a hijab for men? Why is hijab restricted to women if there's no hijab for men?
Exactly. We have to look at the actual meaning of hijab. What is hijab? What is the primary hijab? The primary hijab is for the woman to protect herself, to lower her voice, not to be too, what do you
to
call
to make herself noticed.
Exactly,
yeah.
Too much. Of course, if you do it in an Islamic intellectual way, but more or less the protection, not to be too open, not to be too yelling and stuff. But on the other hand, the male has actually a bigger hijab than this. He has a greater responsibility in the sense that he is, from the Quran, said to lower his gaze. And that is his hijab, his primary hijab. Mm-hmm. Another thing is the physical part, which is actually not that important. But that is still something that is connected to each other, which you can't separate.
Right.
So the primary hijab is the spiritual, mm-hmm. whilst the secondary hijab is the physical part, the actual dress mm-hmm. code, mm-hmm. if you can say.
It's very interesting because you find that a lot of work on like psychobiology, for example, they talk about men tending to be more visually oriented.
Exactly.
You know, yeah. You know, they tend to be very easily drawn to women.
Not that, by their intellect, but
right,
their
physical appearance.
Exactly. You know? So that is the whole philosophy behind the physical hijab for a woman, that she have to cover herself up, not in order to, what can you say, oppress herself or make her less worth than the man, but to protect herself, to say, well, I can decide who has to look at me right. like that with lust. Or
I see.
It could be that he's not, but the risk is there. Mm-hmm. So that she is too smart, she is too clever, and she want to be judged by her intellect and not her appearance.
Right, her physical appearance.
Exactly.
And you find that, for example, in Western societies, that exactly is taking place. You know, you find, for example, women being used as tools to sell products, for example.
Exactly. But you don't see men in the same position.
Right. A very interesting one is, like, for example, you look at the Oscars, you know, or the Grammy Awards and stuff like that. You know, you see the women coming up on the stage and they all have plunging necklines and, you know, big long slits in their dresses and it's tight and clinging.
Exactly.
And the men seem to be so properly dressed, you know, like with the bow tie and the suit.
They are covered
so
in their physical hijab.
Yeah. Does that indicate some kind of a power differential, you know, between men and women?
I would say, but you could tell from the media, the Western media in general, mm-hmm. the woman, not only physically, not only in her way of dressing, but her way of appearing, she is more or less always the one, if you see in all commercials, mm-hmm. she is the secretary. Mm-hmm. She is the one who's just supporting.
Right.
While the man is the one driving. How often do you see in a commercial, for example, cars, that mm-hmm. it's the woman driving and the man sitting beside?
Right.
Well, but they were talking about equality
right.
in this sense.
Right. Now, so to what extent then is this equality in the West real? You know, the equality in the West between men and women. They say they're equal, but to what extent is this real?
From what I can see and from what I hear, I don't think it's very real, as you say, because when you see in the media, when you look everywhere in society, when you look at the jobs, when you look at how people are paid, men and women can do exactly the same job but get different pay.
Right.
So what does that have to do with equality?
And the differential between men's dress and women's dress in the West, what kind of effect do you think it has upon the female psyche, you know, the mind of a woman?
I think actually that it can affect her in that way that her intellect is not that important. Mm-hmm. Her spirituality, her as a person and not as just appearance is more important. Her appearance is more important than what she actually is, what she stands for. And I think that can actually ruin a lot in society.
Right, right. Very interesting. Is Islamic society a patriarchy? When you look at, for example, the rule that says that women should not be heads of society, when we look at the patrilineal aspect of the family, you know, children inherit their father's names.
Exactly.
And it's through the patrilineal line that, for example, inheritance takes place and so on.
Of course.
You know, could we say that Islam is a patriarchy?
I wouldn't say that, no. Because if you see, it could be that the child is inheriting the father's name, mm-hmm. but what is the name put up to all the woman's values? Because in Islam, the man doesn't actually have the right to bring up the children with his values, but the responsible is for the woman.
Right.
The responsibility is for the woman to actually put her values, put all her good values in the child.
Right.
So as the same for the male. When he comes home, she has to provide a safe security for him in an emotional manner, of course. Mm-hmm. So the male is maybe just the symbol in society for all her work.
I see.
Do you understand what I mean?
I see.
That she is actually the work behind this success.
Uh-huh.
But again, who says that a woman can't rule a society? Mm-hmm. Maybe it is just the nature of woman that she doesn't have to have this see me.
Right.
That it's more male-oriented work. Mm-hmm. Do you get what I mean?
It's very, very interesting. So what you're saying is that women do have a power in society, but this power is not a male power. This is a female power. The female power of influencing her children, the female power of providing a secure domestic environment for
exactly.
her family, the female power of sort of like a behind-the-scenes type of situation.
Exactly.
Whereas male power tends to be out there looking to display itself, you know, looking to sort of create sometimes trouble for people
yeah.
and so on.
Exactly.
The female power is much more integrative.
But again, you can say that it's actually the same with an actor. Mm-hmm. The actor is actually not doing anything, but it's him on the screen. But he has learned just this by heart. He has been taught by the one who wrote this manuscript.
Right, right.
So the what do you call it, the author of the whole manuscript, the whole movie, is actually the one to be credited.
Exactly.
But he is not. It's always the actor who's hanging on the walls.
Uh-huh.
So I see that a bit as a symbol of the view in West, that you put the posters on the wall of the one who's actually not doing anything.
I hear you.
Maybe he's doing something, but it's not the one behind the work.
I want to thank you. We're just out of time.
Okay.
It was quite a deep insight into the differences between men and women in Islamic society. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this news break. Welcome back, and we have to welcome our second guest on the show, Saida Habib, who is a life coach for Muslim women in the London area, I presume, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the London area. Welcome, Saida, to Minbar.
Thank you so much.
And the first thing I'd like to ask you is tell me a little bit about what you do as a life coach. You work primarily with Muslim women, right?
That's true.
Yes.
I do work primarily with Muslim women, and there is a reason for that, because I mean there are a lot of life coaches in other communities that mm-hmm. have been for, you know, 20 plus years, but there are very, very few. In fact, I'm one of the only ones in the Muslim community.
No kidding.
It's a fairly...
So you're a pioneer in this regard.
It feels like that, yes.
Uh-huh.
I've been doing this for about 3 years
right.
now, and it does feel like that, because a lot of people haven't heard about coaching. And I do focus on working with Muslim women because I am one, so you know, mm-hmm. there's that immediate bond and understanding. And the second thing is that there's a need for it.
Right.
So I purposely chose to, you know, narrow down the market that I that I choose to pursue.
Now, what is a life coach?
A life coach is somebody who works with people to help them achieve their goals. Mm-hmm. So it can be any area of your life. For example, looking at issues with your relationships. Let's say your marriage is breaking down. Or even if you're single and you want to get into a relationship and you want to be married. Things like looking at work-life balance, looking at, okay, what about other issues, spiritual issues? You know, you want to be more practicing, but there are other influences around, struggling with that kind of thing. So that comes into it as well. Mm. And looking at how you can, you know, enhance your own self-esteem.
Right.
Looking at who you want to be as a woman in today's day and age. Mm-hmm. And these are very, very challenging issues. And a lot of our people, our women, do not feel comfortable going to a non-Muslim to discuss these issues. Because there isn't that bond, there isn't that understanding. And non-Muslims wouldn't understand the do's and don'ts of our faith, right? So there's that immediate trust when they come in, they go, oh, you know, this person at least knows what I can do and what I can't do, what my limitations are.
I see. So are you trained to be a life coach?
Definitely.
I see.
There are, because it's not a regulated industry, I might add, there are unfortunately quite a few people out there who are untrained. I mean, I don't really know in our sector so much, but I am a qualified life coach. I've done 2 different coaching trainings, and I'm also very much trained in NLP, neuro-linguistic programming as well. And now I'm also adding nutrition to it.
Right.
I'm studying naturopathic nutrition because mind and body is one system. Mm. So I want to support people in every area or as many areas, you know, because it all comes together in the end.
Now, what makes a life coach different to, let's say, for example, a social worker or a family counselor?
Well, I think a life coach is personally trained to look at what people are not saying, to work with people on a one-to-one basis, to look at the deeper values, the goals, the beliefs, that sort of thing, to really help people to set goals, even in areas where they're not sure of where they want to go.
Right.
So they don't necessarily know what the results are that they want, but they know that they're unhappy with where they are.
Uh-huh.
But a social worker, in my understanding, is very different because they're trying to rescue people in a certain situation. They're looking at the outside. Let's say, God forbid, you know, a woman is in a domestically violent situation that she needs to get out of immediately. You know, that's where a social worker would come in to rescue that lady, take her to safety. And after all that basic rehabilitation is done, then someone like, a therapist, a counselor, or a coach comes in.
I see. Mm. Now, you're mentioning that, for example, some Muslim women would rather talk to a Muslim life coach as opposed to a non-Muslim life coach. To what extent are cultural issues, cultural difficulties, to what extent do they play in people's dysfunction, for example?
Well, I think people feel that it's a huge, huge part of it because, you know, we are raised in whichever culture we are, you know, part of, and our beliefs come from that, you know, so our beliefs, our own beliefs are formed from the beliefs of our parents, our grandparents, those who are around us. Those are, you know, we kind of take in on an unconscious level. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're told that, you know, for example, you should really have a level of respect for your elders, you know, certain cultures, that's very, very important.
Right.
And in other cultures, it may not be. So depends on where you're raised, and that's going to play a big part in it. And then when people have issues or when they're growing old, they're exploring who they are, that's when they find the battle starts.
You know,
where do they fit into the whole cultural norm?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where sometimes people get a bit stuck.
Uh-huh.
And that's where coaching can really help them to explore, you know, how to get a balance. How do you make your parents happy? How do you make society happy? And live out your dreams as well, achieve your goals as well.
Right. Now, to what extent does, for example, Islamic culture, the dichotomy or apparent dichotomy between Islamic culture and non-Islamic culture, you know, Muslims as immigrants living, for example, in London or in the UK, this conflict, to what extent does it create problems for Muslim women? What results or consequences have you seen as a life coach out of this type of dichotomy?
Well, one of the biggest problems is relationships.
Mm.
and those people who are looking for a solid relationship. Like, for example, in Islamic countries or in Islamic cultures, it's much more family driven. It's much more, you don't take as much of an active role, as it were, in finding your partner. Right. Here, younger people, younger Muslim women going to schools and things like that, they are drawn to this whole idea of going out and mixing and, finding your own partner. And then when they're older as well, they want to go out and do that. So, and parents tend to oppose that. So that is one example that I've seen quite a bit of. Then another is, of course, hijab and Islamic dress, because, at home that might be expected of you, but you may not fit in with your peers at university or school. And these things usually start at that age, teens and upwards.
Right.
And then the problems start getting deeper and deeper and deeper.
Right. So how do you deal with that? How do you deal with, for example, for a lot of the people who are out there looking, yes, this is something I'm experiencing right now. Mm. How do you deal with a teenager, okay, or let's say even like a first-year university student who insists on finding their own mate and not to marry the second cousin back home in, Pakistan or Lebanon and so on.
Well, the first challenge is really to help them figure out what exactly it is they want, right? Mm. So the main thing is, okay, first of all, the individual or the family has to identify that there's a problem here and that they need support. That's
right.
Number one, right? Then when they get that, let's say they come to coaching, it's really about finding out, okay, what is it that this individual is really after? Is it just to be rebellious, or is it that their parents are, or their family is not understanding the kind of partner they want? And you sit down and you train. I actually work with people on two areas. One is to discover what they really want, find out what they want. Two is also learning to communicate. Mm-hmm. So it's also, communication is a skill. It's not you're not necessarily born knowing how. And it might be that if you're raised in a different culture and your parents came from a different culture, you need to learn to communicate with each other in each other's language.
Yes.
Because it is different.
Right.
It is different.
Right. And so the value systems are also
it changes.
Different. The points of reference and so on. Yes.
Exactly. It depends on, where, like somebody who's been born and brought up here, even though they come from a Muslim family and all of that, their parents' culture and their parents' reference points are completely different to their own. So they have to learn to sit down and communicate with each other, isn't it?
Right.
I mean, I've helped women, alhamdulillah, repair their marriages like this. Mm-hmm.
Because it goes into the marriage area too, in terms of women.
Yeah. Because every two people, there are no two people who think exactly alike,
right?
Do they? I've never met any. Alhamdulillah, I honestly believe that we are all unique individuals. We're as unique as our fingerprints, And subhanAllah, we each have a unique pair, right? Mm-hmm. Unique set, rather. So it's really about understanding where you are and where you want to go as well,
Right.
And helping people to gradually do that. Coaching is a journey. It does not happen overnight. Mm-hmm. So that's something that people need to be aware of. It takes a little bit of time, and it takes that perseverance as well.
Now, to what extent does, for example, marriages, problematic marriages, do you find a lot of problematic marriages taking place between, say, somebody who's from this society marrying somebody from that society? Or do you find some problems in marriage taking place with a family, a marital couple, coming from that society into this society, and people changing when they land here, when they come here?
I've seen both. Mm-hmm. And actually what it is, depends on the direction that two people are going. Sometimes you can't predict, but people do grow apart. Mm-hmm. And it's finding out what's actually happening. And sometimes the amazing thing is that one person can come for coaching and it can impact the whole relationship, can impact the whole family, because they start finding out what their values are, what their beliefs are. They learn how to communicate and they learn how to listen.
Right.
And amazing things happen, subhanAllah. I've seen it happen many times before. It's not that it's necessarily going to happen every single time. You can't predict that. It really depends on where people want to go with it. You can't. This is not about forcing someone. It's about raising awareness.
Right. I've heard, for example, that, a Muslim family comes from a culture where the woman is proud or sees her role being at home and taking care of the family and so forth as being paramount. And then they come to this environment And in this environment, women are encouraged to go out there and work and get careers and so forth. And some tensions take place between the couples on this level, because the man wants her to stay home and she wants to go out there and self-realize. How do you resolve this? What kind of hints could you give our viewers with respect to resolving this?
You touched on a very interesting point, because most people live in a world of either or. Mm-hmm. Either I can have this or I can have that. Either I can, you know, my husband gets his way, or I get my way. And it becomes a real tug of war. It's about starting to think win-win. Mm-hmm. How do we win-win? And it's not...
Sounds very nice.
It's not using the word compromise, because compromise to a lot of people implies, again, that one person is yielding and another person is getting what they want. It's really about thinking, okay, how can we get a win-win? Something that you'd be happy with and something that I'm happy with as well. And it's sitting down and talking, communicating, and almost negotiating as well. You know, that's what relationships sometimes are about. It is about negotiating the boundaries and seeing what's suitable. And I think if people are committed to making that work, they can find it. Mm-hmm. But it's just a gradual journey. You may not get it instantly, but if you try, I think people can. And I've seen it happen, you know, sometimes with the help of coaching.
Right. Now, Islam and Islamic principles and so forth, to what extent, because you said, you know, you rather focus on Muslim families, Muslim women, by and large, and I assume that Islam is a background to a lot
of
your
life.
Work, your way of life.
Yeah.
To what extent, what Islamic principles do you use by and large in terms of your coaching activities?
That's a very good one. I think for me personally, as a coach, myself as a human being, I would say that I always believe in delivering value, supporting people to the best of my ability, giving them empathy and compassion and understanding, you know, because I realize that life is tough, you know, and I bring those Islamic principles, you know, my ethics, you know, confidentiality is a big one, you know, because I ultimately know that it's important to know my values, and then I can, you know, support, and my clients are very clear when they come to me where they stand with all of these things. They know that it'll never go anywhere. They know that they're safe. They know that even if their family members were to inquire, they will not get any information from me.
Right.
That kind of thing. As far as my clients go, it's their agenda. So it's their value system. It's where they wish to go. So you see, some people are very practicing, right? They're very adherent to the rules and all of that. Some people are not. Mm. And you can't force them to go that way. They have to find their own path.
Like Rahavideen.
Exactly. Yes. They have to find their own path. They have to find their own awareness. So I just help people where they want help. You know, obviously, there's certain situations, if I feel that I'm ethically, I can't work with them, I won't take on those clients.
Right.
But alhamdulillah, that hasn't happened yet. So.
Now, to what extent does the Muslim society in need of institutions or functions like life coaches and so on, because apparently life coach is something that comes from the non-Muslim environment. You bring inside the Muslim environment, and you hinted upon the fact that many Muslims would rather go to Muslims for help in different areas, whether it be social work or what have you. Should we be creating these type of institutions on a much more rapid pace? Is there a great need for it among Muslims?
Well, I do. I do believe that there is, because there are a lot of Muslim people out there who are not getting the support that they need. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are people who do go to their community centers and who go to, you know, regular mosques or Islamic centers for help, and they get maybe a little bit of the basic support they need. But these people are not qualified to sit with them, you know, day in, day out, week in, week out, and they don't have the resources for that either, because they're so overstretched.
Yes.
Most of these Muslim centers, you find most communities are terribly overstretched. And even charities here that I've worked with in the UK, a lot of them have trouble with budgets, and because I do workshops as well, and I want to really raise awareness. So, you know, answering your question, I think there is a need, because there are a lot of people out there who are struggling, who don't really know where to go. And their families can't really offer that support because, you know, families are tied in emotionally as well. Mm-hmm. It's not like they can really take a step back and be objective. And they don't have the resources. They don't have the skills to support people, to help them. It takes a lot of skill. I've done a lot of training to do this. Mm-hmm. And I keep learning along the way. So I think there is definitely a need. And I hope that, you know, by talking about it and by raising awareness and doing the coaching work that I do, that it will start picking up. And it is on a slow basis. I think it is.
What about the Muslim leadership? I was thinking in terms of the ulama, who tend to be the head of these mosques, you know, the imams, the maulanas, and so on. And also the centers themselves as priorities, you know, because you find that a lot of these Muslim leaders tend to be invited from abroad and be very steeped in one particular culture and not know the other one, you know. And also the fact that these centers are places that the people are more familiar with, as opposed to offices and so on. Mm-hmm. Are there any efforts made to educate these religious leaders, for example, and also to maybe expand the function of these Islamic centers as places where they can go to get life coaching and they can go to get a family counseling and so forth?
I think it would be wonderful if it was actually actively happening. Mm. I think a lot of centers have tried, you know, they say, you know, they have this women's advice and they, you know, they try to, you know, and women do naturally come in. And I think a lot of the brothers go as well. But I think as far as training goes and having specific areas and let's say having the resources saying, you know, there is a coaching center, people can come regularly, whatever. I haven't unfortunately seen that yet.
Right.
And I think that that's where the need lies. It does need to happen because people will naturally gravitate to the mosque because it's the social center as well, and that's where people would even hear about it. So, you know, if, for example, if someone like me was, you know, asked in to come in on a regular basis to one of the area's mosques, I mean, I would gladly go, you know, and offer coaching to people regularly, you know, I would gladly go, but I haven't seen any initiatives like that, and I think that it's really important.
Do you think it's probably because of ignorance? I didn't hear about a life coach until today. I might have heard about it, but it never really interested me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is it about ignorance? Maybe you guys need to like put out the flyers out there.
Ignorance,
and stuff like
I would use the word lack of awareness.
Uh-huh.
Because of the fact that, you know, I think a lot of Muslim communities have gotten used to hearing the word counseling now.
Right.
Okay? That took a while in itself. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not something that happened overnight, and I'm very, very aware of this fact. And, you know, coaching is even newer than that. And here I come along. You know, I've been doing this for about 3 years. I mean, what am I? I'm not expecting this change overnight.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So what I do is I raise awareness wherever I can. Mm-hmm. I use platforms like this,
right.
You know, to talk about it. And I think that people will start catching on that there's something to this. But then again, you know, a lot of people in various Muslim cultures, and I've seen this from people from different countries, there's a fear about talking about things.
Mm-hmm.
There's a fear about, you know, opening up, sharing your problems and that kind of thing. So it's you know, both ways. I think people also need to trust a little bit more that they can get the help they need,
right.
You know, and also be willing to invest in their own development. I think a lot of Muslims, you know, we do invest sometimes in the whole degrees and the reading, writing, and arithmetic. Nowadays, I mean, there's so many educated professionals in so many fields. Alhamdulillah, it's growing. But I think also we need to now focus that awareness towards self-development in this sense as well, because as Muslims we're learning in the Islamic centers and all of that, but we need to be able to help ourselves, you know, time management, emotional management, looking at how we're communicating. These are all essential skills as well.
Right. I mean, it seems to me that this problem is really a cultural problem. You know, I mean, you have Muslims coming from a cultural background where you deal with your problems within your family, you know, and we come into a Western environment where you deal with your problems through
strangers.
Agencies
yes.
and strangers and yes. stuff like that.
Sure.
That could be quite a challenge to, get people to make that crossover.
And I think if it works, mm-hmm. I mean, if you really, if people are getting the support with their families, great. I mean, I believe that if it isn't broken, don't fix it. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, I think that that's fabulous. And we're lucky as Muslims in our cultures to have that, you know. We always have our families behind us. We have the backing that we need. And I think we're really, really fortunate. Mm-hmm. And I'm all for that. I'm not saying, you know, abandon that system
right.
at all, please. You know, I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is that if you're not getting your needs met, mm-hmm. if you're not getting the support that you need, if the issue is within the family, then by all means, you know, try to get that help. Reach out. Look for coaching. I mean, I have a website. I've made myself available as much as possible online in that mm-hmm. sense. You know, I try to offer workshops. I've worked with people globally because I work on the phone as well.
Right.
So, you know, there are bits and pieces of mm-hmm. things happening. And people have told me that it's so wonderful to have Muslim coaches.
Uh-huh.
So there is that need. And, you know, if families are doing the job, then that's wonderful. If you need that little extra support, then reach out for it. That's what I say.
How many of you are there? Like Muslim women life coaches?
I don't know.
You guys don't have like an organization or you don't get together?
No, not yet. Maybe uh-huh. in the future when there are more. But you see, the other problem is that because coaching is not a regulated industry, there are a lot of people out there who are calling themselves sales coaches but who are not trained or not trained sufficiently. I mean, I met somebody, I won't say too many details, but who was in an NLP conference with me, and this was an Asian lady,
mm-hmm.
and she had done a coaching course online for like 2 days, and she called herself a certified coach. And I was quite mortified because I'm like, oh gosh, because you know, you have got
right.
people's lives in a way, you're responsible, you know, when people come to you. And I've had like 240 hours of NLP training alone,
uh-huh.
and I've had like lots of other coaching training, and I've been coaching regularly for years
right.
and all of that. So, you know, you have to be careful who you go to as well,
mm-hmm.
just because they say they're qualified. Test them on it, ask them about their credentials, you know,
mm-hmm,
it's really
mm-hmm.
important.
Mm-hmm, that's very interesting, that's very interesting. So you're a pioneer in this field.
I think so, one of, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and I really hope that, you know, your numbers will increase.
Thank you.
You know, and I really hope that you take a prominent role in training Muslim life coaches.
Inshallah,
in the future.
Inshallah, I'd love to do that. I think that would be really rewarding work.
We've been talking to Saida Habib, life coach for Muslim women in the London area, and really happy to have you here.
Thank you.
You know, and we hope that you join us next week, same time, same channel, on Mimbar. Remember that if you have any questions, comments, or criticisms, please feel free to contact us at mimbar@presstv.ir. That's mimbar@presstv.ir. And until next week, I'll see you same time, same channel.